Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Dave's Good Vibration Station with Dave Cohen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Dave's Good Vibration Station here on LA Talk Radio, world's most listened to internet talk radio station. I'm your host, Davey, and this is the show where we talk about anything and everything to raise your vibration. Where we offer to you new approaches, new ways of thinking, new ways of living in regards to embodying your highest and greatest self and maximizing your potential in this human experience. That's what this show is all about, guys. We have dedicated our lives to the sole purpose of embodying a greater happiness, a greater joy, and a brighter light for all people that resonate with this sense of joy and this level of happiness to participate in and become a part of. We are simply offering you the same messages and wisdom that we learned from so many different types of masters and teachers and spiritual practice and earthly practice, material stuff that we all deal with on the dense 3D physical plane, and integrating all that and how that pans out and how that assists us in becoming more and embodying really who we are as individuals. So that's what the show is about, guys, assisting you guys in becoming the person that you've always wanted to be and in becoming that person that you see in your mind's eye, that you feel in your heart, that you know that you have the potential to become, but you don't know how to get there. And this is the show where we are passionate about sharing with you different ways to get to where exactly you want to be in regards to your state of consciousness. So we have a very special show lined up for you guys today. I'd like to welcome, once again, such a pleasure to have her on the show. And I love her with all my heart. Such an amazing person. Dr. Michelle, welcome to the show today. It's such a pleasure to have you on the air. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Davey. Thank you so much for having me. I just love being on your show.
Aww.
Such an enlightening being. So nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show, Doc, and you are such an enlightened being as well. That's why we just resonate, you know? We just, we understand the importance of practicing the stuff that we talk about. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that they talk the talk and they don't always walk the walk. And something that I love about you, Doc, is you walk the walk before you talk. And I think that's really cool. And, you know, you have enough wisdom and understanding and experience revolving whatever it is that we talked about to where you've been there either through your own personal experience or through the personal experience of a client or having someone close to you that has been through, you know, an experience. So I just, I love what you bring to the show, and thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's great to be with you, as always.
As always, Doc. So this topic actually was inspired by something that we've talked about here on the show before. It's been a circulating topic throughout Oh, throughout many, many different social media platforms or many different media platforms. It doesn't necessarily have to be social media. This has been a topic that's been around for a very long time. But at the same time, research continues to grow. The research and the understanding as to why people practice certain addictive habits and certain addictive, I guess they would be habits, right? Habitual actions that you take, right? So on today's show, we're going to be talking about the idea of addiction. Right. And when I say addiction, we're not just talking about a substance addiction. Right. When people hear the word addiction, they tend to very quickly think of alcohol or AA or NA or substance. Of course, you know, substance is probably one of the main things, if you will, that people become addicted to is some sort of substance. But on today's show, we're not only going to be talking about substance, we're also going to be talking about all different facets and all different types of addictions and why people choose to participate in these habitual actions, which actually are self-destructive, right? You guys have probably seen the show on Bravo before, My Strange Addiction. Very interesting show. For those of you that haven't seen it, Doc, I'm sure you've seen the show. Have you seen My Strange Addiction?
I have seen a little bit of it, yes, and I don't watch it on a regular basis, but I mean, sure. I do know that it's fascinating what people do.
You know? Tremendously fascinating.
Yeah.
Tremendously fascinating. And that's why I actually really am so grateful that I was able to bring you on today's show, because, you know, it's very easy to understand why people get addicted to substance, right? It's not too difficult to ration why, you know, people will try something and then there's a gateway and then they go into something else. You know, there's a progression, especially in this hyper active society that we live in with everybody uses some sort of crutch to do something. And I know we've talked about that on previous shows, but today what we're going to be talking about is what is it within the human consciousness that makes us feel comforted by these addictive patterns? So that's number one. Number two, which kind of loops into number one perfectly here, is what is it, and this is just kind of a summary of today's show, what is it that we can do to shift our comfort zone from self-destructive behaviors to self-empowering behaviors, right? So that's also a quantum shift in behavior, right? Doing something that you've done for a long time that's acted as a crutch for you, that's acted as a comfort zone, acted as an escape. How do you get rid of that, which is self-destructive, and actually turn that into something that's self-empowering? Turn that into something that helps you, helps other people around you, right? Like Tony Robbins, I always bring up Tony Robbins. He goes, I have an insatiable desire to cure suffering for anybody that experiences it. So he is addicted to helping people, right? He is like, he says, he's like, I'm addicted to helping people. I think about it constantly. So here's this man that's obviously used an addictive personality and channeled it in a really positive way. So Doc, I'm going to open up the floor to you. The mic's all yours. What do you think a lot of this stuff comes from? I'll just share with you real quick. Some of the things on My Strange Addiction, there's people that eat the inside of like a bra, like women's bras, like for their bust. There's people that will eat the inside of that, like the foam inside the bra material. There's people that will like sleep next to hair dryers, and they'll have to leave it on all night, like cooling with the hair dryer, and it catches the bed on fire, and they still continue to do. Why do people go to such insane extents to find levels of comfort?
That's interesting, because I think, you know, there's different types of comfort and there's different levels that we're talking about.
Absolutely.
So what happens is when we're taking drugs, all right, it's based on many things. But first of all, obviously, it's based on wanting to feel better.
Sure.
And when you put something into your bloodstream, whatever it is, whatever drug, legal or illegal, what happens is trillions of potent molecules surge through our bloodstream and into our brains. And, you know, that sets off a whole cascade of chemical and electrical events. And that makes us feel euphoric, makes us feel good, makes us feel numb, makes us, you know, it changes our consciousness because most people are fearful or sad or too
sure.
anxious. So they can't control that on a, you know, beta or conscious level that you're on with me right now. We're pretty clear right now. We're not high or anything. And
absolutely.
But, anything like that. So that's what's happening. It's, you know, it's fear. It's wanting to feel better, basically. That's just a very basic thing. Some people, get that real good thing from the release of a dopamine, and GABA, which is the acronym for the chemical that's released when we drink alcohol or take benzodiazepines, which, you know, they're tranquilizers, which is real
sure.
nice. But the thing is that so it's that some of us are inheriting the propensity for addiction more than others. Some people don't
right.
know how to have that shut off part of their brain. They just keep drinking. And that's many times inherited. It's a
right.
gene. We haven't identified it as far as I know. It's a DNA. But
we have not identified the gene.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We have not yet identified that gene, correct?
As far as I know, again, I'm not, you know, a genetic researcher, so maybe they already have.
Right.
And then if they have, then they can find out how to
reverse,
you know, really target that. But so that's number one. It's a chemical reaction, and we all want to feel better. And, you know, number two is we want to escape, you know, the environment. So a lot of it has to do with, you know, a lot of stress in our environment, and primarily growing up in an environment with a lot of stress, a lot of
right.
chaos, conflict.
Right.
Many times with parents who are alcoholics or substance abusers or have mental disorders such as bipolar 1 that are, you know, causing a lot of conflict and very disruptive, a lot
right.
of anxiety, a lot of chaos and fighting and drama going on. So
right.
as we get older, sometimes we don't, you know, we're so used to that. And then our family, either we get out of the family and we move away and we try to build our own lives of sanity. But sometimes it's very difficult, you know, to escape mentally what we have suffered. So we just sort of want to get out of that environment because we're so used to being in a suffering situation that we can't stand the feeling. So, you know, it's an environmental thing as well. So a lot of people do that no matter what. If they're in a work situation, stressful, chaotic, a relationship that they can't get out of that's chaotic or,
sure.
you know, whatever. So it's environmental and it's chemical, you
right.
know.
And I no, please go on. Please go on.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I think the key is, you know, it's very hard when we have inherited an addictive behavior pattern.
Sure.
Have to really work on it. But number two, I think, you know, the ways of sobriety and really involve a lot of changing our consciousness and changing
yes.
the way we look at things in life and people. So
yes.
I think the process of really not – the goal is to be able to have a euphoric or happy or what I call total loving experiences without substances.
Right.
I mean,
right.
right? Once in a while, we can have a drink. Once in a while, cannabis is legal now in California and in many states, and they say it's okay, you know, if you can tolerate it. But I can't tolerate it. I'm allergic to it. But, it's sometimes we do that, and that's fine. A little relaxation.
Sure. whatever it takes to assist the person in, you know, relaxing a little bit, or as long as they don't become dependent, you know. I wanted to ask you in regards to people that were born with
right.
let's say like you said the addictive gene, right? Some people
mm-hmm.
just in their DNA, they have an addictive gene. There's a gene that tells their brains, you know, once they start something, that it's near impossible to stop. That's why they say, oh, I can't do anything, because if I start one thing, then I'm going to go to other things and I can't stop myself. So when working with people that have this gene, and you know, your psychological practice and experiences that you've had in the past and whatnot, would you say that these people really? So okay, excuse my cluttered mind. What I'm trying to say here is, when these people say, for example, oh, I can't have one beer, or I can't smoke one joint without going mm-hmm. to heroin at the end of the night, right?
Yes.
Is that a self-fulfilling prophecy in some way, or is that actually a chemical imbalance? Is that actually, when they get substance in their body, they actually cannot help themselves but to go back to the things that ruin their lives? You know, that's just something I've always wondered. Is there's so many people out there that you know, they will become sober, and then a big fad lately has been you know, to get off a lot of pharmaceutical medication, to get off of a lot of the street medication or street drugs that really ruins people's lives. People have been using an excessive amount of cannabis to get through the withdrawal symptoms. And then they say, oh, I only use the cannabis to get through the withdrawal symptoms. And then I only use the cannabis, they'll say, you know, at night to relax. And I now have gained self-control over my heroin addiction. And now I can smoke cannabis without going directly to heroin. What does that come from? What's the difference between someone that does not have the ability to not go back to their drug of choice after doing something very light versus someone that has the willpower to say, okay, I understand that I've participated in self-destructive behaviors. I've created an addiction towards this. I'm going to change my consciousness. I'm going to shift my understanding when it comes to this. And I'm only going to use cannabis for medicinal purposes. That's it. Does that make sense? How can one group of people react completely differently than the other?
Let's just say someone who, and if someone does not have the addictive gene, and they say, I'm just going to use cannabis for medicinal purposes,
but someone that came. Let's say they came from using heroin or meth or crack or something like, you know, let's say they came, because that's a big fad, like I was saying, is people getting off of these really hard drugs, opiates, speed, stuff like that, and they're only using cannabis to combat the negative side effects. Here they are using a drug. That's what the catch-22 for me is here they are using a drug and they're able to sustain only using cannabis, but then in the long lasting, you know, AA, the 12 steps, they say you can't, they can't use anything, right? If you use anything, then you're going to slip back into patterns.
You know, and there's nothing bad and there's no judgment. Cannabis can relieve pain.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. My gosh.
It can be tremendously medicinal.
20 years ago, who got prescription cannabis.
Right.
It really helped her with her cancer pain. And but the problem is with people who say, I'm going to get off heroin and I'm just going to stick to cannabis, you got to stay there. And the thing is you've got to moderate it. You got to know how to dose, in my opinion.
Right, absolutely, of course.
People who have that chemical, again, imbalance that maybe you know, inherited. It's very hard to say I'm going to a protocol these days. People don't realize how severely addictive it can be and how it stays in our systems. And I'm not only talking about, and people say, well, there's no hangover and I don't feel it the next day. There really are chemical changes still happening the next day after, you know. And so people who are using it every night, I have patients who do that for their pain. They come into my office and they're high still.
Sure.
And because of the level of THC they're using. And I'm going, hey, how are you? Hey, I'm great. And they're dizzy and they trip. And,
right.
And it was, you know, it's not a, people just need to know how to properly dose.
Right.
Dose correctly if they're going to use that as a maintenance drug.
Sure.
And we're talking specifically about cannabis. And there's nothing wrong with that if people can sustain that maintenance level without having their daily conscious
routines,
being
become affected.
Yeah, a friend of mine works in an emergency room here in one of the local hospitals in Los Angeles, and she tells me how many people come into the emergency room, especially at night, on the weekends, because they think they're dying from a heart attack.
Right.
They're having panic attacks, or they're having hallucinations, right. And they think they're dying. And
no, of course, they
didn't dose their THC.
Right, right. No, of course, dosage is very important. No, and that's absolutely a known thing, especially when it comes to, you know, any substance, of course. Doc,
exactly.
What I wanted to actually move into is, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, it's pretty understandable how people can, you know, become addicted to substance. We've talked about this on the show quite a bit, and, you know, assisting people, helping people that have called in, messaged, even guests that we've had on the air that have been belligerent before. And it's just interesting to see how, you know, drugs and addiction affects people. All different types of people. Doesn't matter who you are, where you are, where you live. It's, you know, there's something there that you can get, you know, that people are using to self-medicate. What I wanted to move a little bit more into is the stuff on like My Strange Addiction, right? Like the eating of the foam of the inner bra, or sleeping with a hair dryer that has to be on, or picking at your face excessively and extremely aggressively. Right, until it bleeds, and I'm not talking about when you're on a drug. This is just they're not on drugs, at least that we know of. They don't, they probably are, but you know, to our understanding, their addiction is not substance. Their addiction is something very tangible, very very real. It's not necessarily it is a state of consciousness, because it shifts their state of consciousness. So of course it's a state of consciousness, but it's not something that they're inducing themselves with. They're not giving.
Right.
They're not deliberately changing their brain chemistry by sleeping next to a hairdryer, or, you know, picking at their face. But at the same time, they are changing the brain chemistry. It does release dopamine. It does make them feel euphoric, because obviously, if it didn't, then they wouldn't go to such extents to continue participating in these self-destructive behaviors. So, what is it that makes people want to participate in these types of things?
Okay. So that goes into another category, and I don't necessarily mean to go, because I wanted to go more into the higher consciousness level, but since we're talking about that, this goes into the level of, you know, when you're looking at compulsions or you're looking at habits, this goes into the category of obsessive compulsive disorder.
Right.
So we have these firmly held false beliefs, which are delusions, that these certain things will comfort us and help us and make us feel better. OCD means I have to have certain things that are going to make me feel better, I believe. So you're in a compulsion to keep that hair dryer with you. Keep it.
Sure.
And it can stem from all sorts of early, maybe you, as a baby, were comforted by warm air because you slept next to a heater all the time. Maybe, you know, maybe it's triggering old comfort things. Eating foam, that's, you know, that's a compulsion, which who knows what that's related to. But there's certain compulsions, and it's all associated with calming stress and feeling safe. So those on the next level, we do get addicted to doing that because we believe that that's going to make us feel better.
Right.
And once we feel that something's going to make us feel better, no matter what it is, then, you know, our brain's more powerful than anything. So if we believe it, it is so.
And that's moving into higher consciousness.
Yes,
you know,
it can be very self-destructive. Right. So awareness is the key. Taking someone like that who's going to be, you know, I mean, there's nothing really harmful except if sleeping next to a hairdryer, unless, you know.
Well, it's tremendously harmful. Yeah, because they catch their bed on fire. These people have catch their hair on fire. It's very dangerous. People have like burned their homes down sleeping next to hair dryers and stuff. It's crazy.
You're supposed to monitor these things. Yes. So sleeping is not a good thing. But and eating, you know, certain strange things. There's a disorder called pica, and it's where children eat paper and they eat chalk and they eat, you know. People just do that too as they get older. So, I mean, there's different things that you're not realizing, but it's a habit. It's not really up there. You got to change your consciousness about what you're doing to yourself, and it's a huge shift. You have to work with someone if you're doing those kind of self-destructive obsessions. You have to really work with someone who knows how to step you out of it and in through the process. And then you have to, I believe, you know, there's a lot of cognitive behavioral therapies you can use, but I believe you have to go to a higher level of belief in yourself. I think you have to
Absolutely.
And of course,
no question.
The theory of the AA groups with the substance abusers and things, that is empowerment. But the only thing with that to me is that, and I'm not putting it down, is that you're giving up yourself to a higher power, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. God,
sure.
Hashem, Allah,
whatever,
Buddha, whoever.
Right.
They are a higher power, but you're part of that, see? So the only way for me to help people understand their empowerment is to know that they connect with that higher power and they have that within them.
Right.
So the spiritual level, that to me is the bridge to getting there.
Right.
But people have to be ready for it. A lot of people have to be primed for it, and they're not ready for it because they've never believed that. So you have to instill self-empowerment tools.
Right, and that's so important. And moving that segued perfectly, that moved perfectly into the next segment of the show, which is what are some actions or behaviors, anything that you as a licensed psychologists know, any tools that we can share with anybody out there, anybody that's struggling with any sort of addiction, whether it's substance, whether it's doing anything habitual that is self-destructive to your life, doesn't matter how you label it, sex, eating odd foods, whatever it might be. What is something that is universal? And this might be an unanswerable question. I don't know. Is there something that is a universal tool that will help people that are struggling with this stuff? What's the first step to really, and I'm not talking about necessarily the 12 steps, unless those are the steps.
Yeah.
What is the first step to really recognizing, obviously, well, that's the first step. Recognize that you have the addiction, right? That's what they say in the AAs and the NAs. Am I correct? They say the first step is recognizing that you have something wrong. So, okay, recognize, admitting, admit and recognize that there's something that's out of alignment, something that you need to realign, something that you're addicted to, right? Okay, so after recognition, what's something, okay, so let's see, people recognize it, they're going on these shows, it's called My Strange Addiction, they know that they have an addiction, they've struggled so hard, and obviously it's not going to be cured by one answer on Dave's Good Vibration Station, but just to help people out there, if they don't know where to go, they don't know where to step, they know they have something wrong, they know that they want help, let's say, you know, they don't have the means to get that help, or they've tried getting the help, and it doesn't work.
Right.
What's a universal tool within self? I guess I'm answering I'm somewhat answering my own questions as I say them. It's kind of like source, right? It all comes back to source. It all comes back to that higher power that you just spoke about, Doc.
Yes.
Recognize that there is. Right.
Yeah.
Please go on. No.
No, right. It does. But I think, you know, the steps are, of course, admitting and knowing, and which a lot of people can't or don't, but they sort of do, but there comes a time when, you know, and they have to hit bottom where they can't earn a living. They have no friends. Their friends have left them because they're acting scary. They're a mess. they're hitting bottom, no matter what they're on, whatever right. it is. And even the strange and peculiar addictions that they talk about on that show, they're hitting a place. So number one is just getting clean. And how do you get clean is you literally you go to rehab. That's number one, sure. no matter what you have. Whatever you're doing that's self-destructive, you have to get clean. Because if you don't, I have people who come to my office and they're still, you know, sort of using, and their family's pressured them to get clean and they think they can handle it on their own. I say, you need to, number one, get clean because you've crashed so many times in your life and then you've come back and you've crashed and you come back. You're doing the same cycle. So what you have to do is get clean before you come to therapy because you're not going to be able to get the process. Once you're pretty cleaned out, you have to, and, you know, ridding yourself of these chemicals, you, then you're ready, even though you have urges, then you're ready for the teaching. So that, you know, begins on many levels. But for me, it's knowing that you have the power. You may right. know you don't have power because of your past of falling down and then getting up and falling down. But they do actually have the power, and they need to believe that. And we, so what you can do is use tools to gain that power. So it's, you know, building the body back up through yoga is amazing because you're incorporating
yes. yoga is amazing.
Heart rate, breathing, and mental techniques, which are really empowering you and opening you up to that higher power. So that's an amazing technique to use for people. And there's different types of, you know, meditation. Some people, you know, have binaural beats they listen to. They listen to music and they just go into basically relaxing their mind. The goal is to get rid of the stress because the stress is what creates the disease and the need to use in the body. So if you use imagery, it's wonderful. Hypnosis imagery, breathing techniques. Every time you feel the urge to, if you're stressed out or whatever, you start managing that because you are the captain of your brain and your body. And when you start managing that, you steer and you can go any place you want. But you got to be able to hold on, you know, to the wheel and right. know where you're going and know what the signs are when you're, yeah, I'm using all these metaphors, but when you're in rough waters, you just sure. still have to hold on to the wheel and go straight ahead.
Right.
Because it's not easy. It's part of the life journey is the lesson that you have to learn to overcome the trauma that you've been exposed to.
Right.
So it's loving yourself is such a huge part of going through, you know, that process of getting sober again. That is so important for you to do.
Right.
So it's empowering, loving yourself, knowing you have the tools, and using those tools consistently on a daily basis. And whether it's journaling, whether it's the first thing you do when you get out of bed is sitting in a quiet place.
Self-affirming.
And gratitude for
right.
waking up another day, for being sober.
Sure.
Designing your day, opening yourself up for wonderful experiences and new lessons.
Right.
And learning that, and loving yourself again, and loving that child that you were when you were so scared and you were little and you were being abused or your parents were screaming or you were feeling alone and you were feeling ostracized, and just going back and loving that little kid you were and knowing
right.
that you have the power as an adult to love that child within you.
Right, right.
So that's what that's about. It's really, it's a process, but it's using the consciousness that we have, that strong conscious mind who can go into different states, you know, whether it's like a alpha state or a theta, which are relaxed pre-sleep states, and just reprogramming your subconscious.
Yes.
And
yes.
knowing that you are valuable, knowing that you're loved, and give yourself a chance to connect with a higher power out there.
Yes.
Talk to your higher power, whoever that is.
Yes.
Have a dialogue every day and with gratitude for the smallest things.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I have patients who are beyond wealthy. Beyond wealthy.
Right.
And they're not happy people.
Right.
And I have patients who, you know, they don't know how to love because they don't love themselves. They don't know how to experience joy and ecstasy without cocaine.
Sure.
Or without alcohol or without cannabis. They can't just feel and be. And those are the techniques that I help teach them is to know that they can really, they can release these chemicals and change their pineal gland to you know, really open themselves up to some amazing experiences of empowerment.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Doc, I have a question for you. So something that has come up, so as you probably know from us just chatting in the past and knowing each other for such a long time, I am an info freak. I am totally all about finding information about anything regarding the human experience, whether it's monetarily based, whether it's based on consciousness, whatever it is, right? I'm always looking for new information, new things that expand consciousness and expand the horizon of what we understand as our, you know, day-to-day lives, and essentially assist us in embodying a higher power. That higher power that you speak of assists us in embodying a brighter light. Right. So that leads me into, there's been a huge movement, especially in the Silicon Valley area, when it came out that Steve Jobs was an avid LSD user. He actually quoted that he came up with the idea of the iPod while under the influence of LSD. He coded the iPod while under the influence of LSD. So there was this huge wave a couple of years ago in the Silicon Valley, and now it's picking up even more. So, you know, the techie, all the people that are really into technology and into computer coding or into just really anything having to do with new age technology, right? Leading edge technology. These people have been using psychedelics to expand consciousness. And in the same study that I was reading, it wasn't a study, a clinical study. It was just nothing that has been measured by science, but it's just something that they were speaking that this is happening. They were talking. They also brought up in the same, it's an article. They brought up in the same article that people have been using these tools as well, the same tools to expand their consciousness to new horizons, to get them off of certain substances. So a lot of people have been using these psychedelic tools for different things. If you're in Silicon Valley and you aren't an addict, then you're going to be using these for the sole purpose of expanding your mind, expanding your consciousness, understanding coding from a higher dimension, right? We've talked about this stuff on the show before when it comes to the use of psychedelics and higher consciousness, but we've never talked about the relationship between psychedelics and sobriety and how it affects addiction and how it affects that part of the brain. So there has been proof throughout the medicine community. And then, so this was on to my next bit of research that I did after reading this article. Yeah. So I started looking up addiction and the relationship. So from a psychological point of view, what would you say to someone that said to you, let's say you had a client or you had a patient or you were just chatting with someone and they said, I was able to get off a heroin addiction from using psilocybin in psychedelic mushrooms and dosing it properly, using it in a ceremonial setting. I really wanted to get clean. I really wanted to get help, but I didn't have the money to go to rehab. I didn't have insurance. I needed to find an alternative method, but I had to get off of this. I had to find the willpower within myself. What would you say to someone that has done that? Because there are many people out there, whether it's psilocybin or LSD, there's a lot of people out there that have claimed that they've been able to get off of addictions by tapping into this higher consciousness that they found through the use of psychedelic medicine. And it's not the type of psychedelic experience where you go to a party and you try to take this to, you know, hallucinate or to get high. This is an experience that you go within yourself, or you set it up to where it is medicinal, right? It's not recreational. It is medicinal. What are your thoughts on the relationship between psychedelic healing and sobriety, or what it does to the addiction part of the brain?
There's number one, I do caution people who trade one, and it is, you know, it's a form of a drug.
It is, absolutely.
No, trading one for another, because we can get, as studies of course show, we can get addicted to what's going on when you expose yourself to LSD and other hallucinogens. It took about 20 years for brain researchers to finally succeed in understanding what's going on with LSD and other hallucinogens. And what happens is it binds to the serotonin receptor. I'm going to go psychological on you again here.
Sure.
So here we go. Ready? Okay. So what happens is when the LSD binds to the serotonin, it elevates, it's sort of like, what do they call it? It's like completely kind of wraps its arms around the serotonin and holds on to it. That's sort of why trips sometimes with LSD can last a long time when you're on a higher dose. It does open up in a way a lot of parts of the brain that are not usually opened up. It does not last sometimes like you'd like it to last in your life. People keep taking antidepressants to release the serotonin and or the norepinephrine or whatever, so it lasts every day, which is fine because you're not producing enough or pushing enough through your neurons. But what happens is, so this is what's going on. You know, serotonin is associated with non-depression, with happiness, euphoria, things like that. So
right.
I think that people can heal, and they're doing a lot of, experiments with what's called microdosing. So,
yes.
I mean, we're talking, oh, my gosh.
It's about one-tenth of it. It's about one-tenth of what a traditional, right? I am familiar with microdosing. It's anywhere between one quarter or one-tenth. That's what's described as a microdose. Anywhere between one quarter or one-tenth of a traditional full dose, making it a very mild experience, making it an extremely controlled experience, right? Because sometimes in the use of these psychedelic practices, people can lose control very easily because you're disassociating from your ego. You're disassociating from what you understand to be your reality. You're shifting into a higher consciousness. You're shifting into a higher dimension. That's really what is happening, is you're shifting your, and I'm going to go, you went psychological. I'm going to go spiritual on you, Doc. So I'm going to talk consciousness and quantum physics. So this, these people like Alan Watts, people like Graham Hickok, these people have spoken about accessing these higher realms and higher dimensions of consciousness through the use of these psychedelic tools. These people, of course, studied with medical doctors. They were PhDs themselves. I don't believe Alan Watts was, but Graham Hickok. One or the other. If you guys look him up, he's awesome. He's really cool. He has some great information and great quotes, great videos on YouTube too. These people talk about what's called a psychonaut, someone that explores alternate dimensions through the use of psychedelic medicine. These people talk about accessing these other dimensions and gaining this sense of self-empowerment. Now, they're not doing this stuff every day. They might be doing it once a week. They might be doing it once a month. Some people might do it once every 6 months, maybe once a year as a recalibration. But I guess where I'm coming from is I absolutely believe that these substances can become drugs once mm-hmm. they are abused, right? You can abuse yep. anything. I mean, even right. the most sacred molecule that I believe is the most sacred molecule on the planet, called dimethyltryptamine. It's found in our pineal glands. It's released every single night when we sleep. It's when we dream is when it's released. It's actually what kind of resets the brain when dimethyltryptamine is released. You have entered REM, rapid eye movement. You are in a deep, deep sleep. That's when the DMT is released in your brain. So when you self-induce with DMT, you see these higher dimensions and you feel such a sense of euphoria and self-empowerment. And it doesn't feel like you're high. It doesn't feel like you're doing something that's bad for you. It feels like you're doing something that's really, really good for you. But at the same time, there's people out there that smoke this stuff every day. So it becomes a drug. So once again, they're taking a sacred tool and turning it into something that is toxic. And that's because, okay, so that's what loops around. We can call anything a medication. We can call anything a healing tool. But once it shifts, whether it's pharmaceutical, whether it's over the counter, whether it's something that comforts us, whether it's food,
yeah,
the moment that we rely on it for happiness,
right,
is the moment that it becomes an addiction.
Yes.
Would you agree?
Yeah. I agree. Now, if we're addicted to kale, that's okay.
Sure. Like Tony Robbins, he's addicted to helping. Right. Right.
If we're addicted to you know, something that's really healthy for us, that's different. But, you know, it's what is healthy for us. And LSD can... you know, open up certain parts of the brain that have been dormant for a while and you know.
It can also fry the brain. It can also completely fry the brain.
Yeah. So it's a matter of, you know, working with people who are specialists who,
right.
you know, there are a lot of labs and I know you have to get wrapped pretty soon here on the show, but. Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, I think you're right. I mean, it's, you know, it's just a matter of knowing how to do it, knowing how to, you know, kind of work with the right people who will walk you through it. People who have a really dramatic major depressive disorder, suicide, have really been helped with the use of microdosing with LSD in certain laboratories. So just wanted to say that as well.
Right, absolutely. And there's been, there's this foundation called MAPS, M-A-P-S, mm-hmm. and they do research on the relationship between PTSD and MDMA. So there's, yeah. it's actually, it started around the 80s, 70s, late 70s, maybe mid 70s. And when it was kind of became a bigger thing in the 80s was MDMA therapists, people that would serve MDMA to a lot of war veterans, people that have tremendous PTSD, saw terrible, terrible things and want to end their lives. And, you know, they do it in a fashion that's not addictive. They do it in a way that does help these people to make sure that they're using the substance in the right way, in a ceremonial, healthy, healing, addiction-free setting. And that's really what this comes down to. You know, Doc, I love you so much. In summary for today's show, what I want to just say, first of all, thank you so much for spending your Sunday afternoon with us, Doc, and sharing all your wisdom and your empowerment. It's tremendous, and I just have the best shows with you. We just feed off of each other so organically, and I love you with all my heart. Thank you for sharing with us how to recognize, first of all, when we have an addiction, how to recognize other habits in our lives that are self-destructive, how to shift those self-destructive patterns, where to go, how to, we talked about the chemistry in the brain, right? What's really happening behind the scenes? What chemicals are being released? All of this information, all this stuff is so valuable. So I'm gonna let you guys go. If you want some more information, feel free to email me anytime, davesvibrationstation@gmail.com. Make sure to check out every Friday on LA Talk Radio, Channel 1, Pacific Standard Time, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle. You can't miss it. It's cool stuff. Friday at 11, it's in the AM Pacific Standard Time. Thank you so much, Doc. All the unconditional love, light, happiness, abundance, joy, and laughter from our hearts to yours. Thank you guys so much. And once again, keep your head held high, wear your heart on your sleeve, And we'll see you next Sunday. Love you guys. Peace.
You're listening to Dave's Good Vibration Station with Dave Cohen, right here on LA Talk Radio.